From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made tonight at the Little Theater. At 6:30 tonight, the Little is offering a free public screening of the new documentary called Citizen Coke. The film aims to show the connection of big money to American politics, and in particular, the connection of big money to the Tea Party. And in particular, the film focuses on the Koch brothers, billionaires who helped launch a national organization designed to elect their preferred candidates. Well, tonight, the Little Theater is hosting a free screening of Citizen Koch at 6:30, followed by a public discussion. I'll moderate the discussion, and we'll have two panelists. Investigative journalist David K. Johnston will be there tonight. Linda Powell will also be there. She's an author and professor of political science at the University of Rochester. We would love to see you there tonight. The film is roughly 90 minutes long, and we'll talk as long as the discussion stays hot. The seating's first come, first serve, and again, it's free. Free tonight, 6:30 at the Little Theater, followed by a discussion. Now, the Little screening of the film is not necessarily an endorsement of its message. Instead, the purpose is to spark a conversation. And that is exactly what the film is designed to do as well. This hour, my guest is filmmaker Tia Lesson, one of several filmmakers who worked on Citizen Coke. I'll have the chance to ask her what she thinks a member of the Tea Party would think if he or she watched her film. Now, Lesson and her colleagues say that this film was born when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on Citizens United, essentially opening political spending to far fewer limits. The critics and the filmmakers, we should note, say that it's now easy to buy an election. The defenders of the court decision say that campaign contributions are a form of free speech, and it's important to protect all forms of speech. The filmmakers behind Citizen Coke have said that too often big money wins in American elections, and that just as often the big money does not have the general public's interests at heart. They say that's true of the Koch brothers, and they attempt to demonstrate that in their film. In the Tea Party, they found a kind of dissonance. The idea behind the Tea Party is, a grassroots movement, a citizen's effort to push their values and agenda back into focus. But in Citizen Coke, the filmmakers say that the Tea Party instead became one of the most heavily funded and corporately orchestrated operations in our country's history. Let's listen to some audio from the trailer for the film Citizen Coke.
I am watching my Republican Party implode.
It's made me question whether or not they truly represent what I believe in.
Tea Party and Republicans are not the same thing.
My brother Charles and I provided the funds to start the Americans for Prosperity.
Money is a weapon.
Wisconsin's a good example where the people were overpowered by money.
How much have you put into Wisconsin?
Just over $10 million.
Wisconsin is open for business.
The largely unknown consequence of Citizens United is that it has unleashed money that our disclosure laws are not equipped to reveal.
Any chance we'll ever get to be a completely red state? What can we do to help him?
The Koch brothers own refineries that specialize in some of the worst types of oil. They're extraordinarily wealthy.
Charles and David Koch were the largest donors to Governor Walker's campaign.
You cannot even buy a Democrat congressman for $2,500. A Republican congressman seems to take more, $140,000 plus a yacht.
The point of it is to find a way to spend money in elections without telling anyone who you are.
And why would you want to do that?
Well, that's a good question.
I am a Republican. What I voted for is not what I got.
People like the Koch brothers have purchased the Republican Party. It's not my party anymore.
If it wasn't for the union, I couldn't have retired.
Unions are the only competition Republicans have.
Bust the unions, it's over.
Aren't they happy just being millionaires? Do they really have to be gazillionaires?
Listen to me, America. They don't care about you because you don't bring a check.
All right, so that's audio from the trailer for the film Citizen Coke. And filmmaker Tia Lesson will be my guest in just a moment. We should also tell you a bit about her background. Working alongside filmmaker Carl Diehl, Tia Lesson has a long history in documentary filmmaking. Diehl and Lesson have been nominated for an Academy Award. They've worked often with Michael Moore and co-produced Moore's films Fahrenheit 9/11, Bowling for Columbine, and Capitalism, A Love Story. Lessen has also done plenty of work in the world of music, producing films about Bob Dylan and George Harrison. The national release of Citizen Coke is today, and we hope to see you tonight at the Little Theater for that free screening at 6:30, followed by a discussion with Linda Powell and David K. Johnston. I will be moderating. Let's welcome filmmaker Tia Lessen to Connections, and let's begin our conversation a little close to home for those of us in public broadcasting. There's been a lot of attention lately on the fact that you and your co-filmmakers got a setback with regards to PBS funding, and I was hoping you would start by telling us that story, because I think there are some important lessons there.
Sure. We were greenlit for a public television broadcast and a public funding partnership, and all was going well, actually. We were well into production and editing, and they were loving the story we were telling, and they'd seen our works in progress, and it was all thumbs up. And then practically overnight, something changed. Something happened. At first, we didn't know what it was, but they started to raise objections to the title of the film, Citizen Coke, and it wasn't the word citizen they were objecting to. They were also asking that we remove content related to the Cokes from the film, and this was quite surprising to us, and we just didn't understand where this was coming from. It didn't take much to find out that David Koch, the billionaire extremist, is on the board of public television stations in New York City and in Boston. And on top of that, he's a big dollar donor. I think he's donated over $20 million to PBS over the years. And apparently there was some commotion at WNET after another film about inequality in America had some critical things to say about David Koch. And shortly after that film was broadcast, the New York station raised concerns with our funder and the public television sponsor. So it all went downhill from there. Apparently, the New York station was expecting a seven-figure donation from David Koch at the very time that our film was in its finishing stages. And rather than support our film, they really... public television decided to go with a high-dollar donor and protect him from us, I guess, from this film, and from, frankly, the moderate Republicans we feature in the film. And they killed our funding, and they killed our public television broadcast.
I have a bit of a dog in the fight working for WXXI, but I think it's important to point out something in the aftermath here. First of all, there had been some scuttlebutt about this notion of disappointment in PBS, and but you have said, since this came out, you've said that this is another good example for why public television needs day-to-day smaller donors.
Absolutely. I mean, the only reason why people like David Koch have power over their public television is because there's a funding, and public television is our public airwaves. It's our public media, and we need to support public television and public radio, and that means we need to take out our wallets and our checkbooks during pledge drive, and we need to also make sure that Congress stops cutting funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I think that's the only way that the public television can truly be accountable to the public.
Now, what happened after you lost PBS? What happens next for the film?
Well, you know, it was a sort of a... well, first of all, we decided to speak out about it. I mean, I think we tossed and turned a bit because we really do love public television, and we didn't think this reflected well on them. But at the same token, we felt they needed to be held to high standards. So we told our story to Jane Mayer at the New Yorker magazine, and she wrote a piece about it. And then a lot of people found out about what had happened to us. And we started to getting letters and emails and phone calls from people all over the country who just, you know, were heartbroken over what had happened and really deeply interested in seeing Citizen Coke. And we got spontaneous donations. We decided to formalize a Kickstarter campaign, a crowdfunding campaign, And about 3,500 people from around the country and actually around the world came to our rescue and donated the monies that essentially were rescinded from public television and made up our funding gap, actually made up a little more than that. We raised about $170,000 in 30 days, and the average donation was $50 or less. So we were able to finish the film, to get our contracts in order and put the film in form to get it out to the world. And now we're finally here. We're actually getting the film out wide and far in the theaters first and hopefully everywhere, you know, in the fall. And we're coming to Rochester.
Well, we're happy to have you. And, you know, every documentary filmmaker has power. When you choose which images to use and which not, which sound bites to use, etc. Give me a sense for how you went about the process of putting this story, this film, together.
Well, our process was fairly organic. I mean, we knew that we were interested in the rise of the Tea Party and following the money trail behind that. And we were also interested in what was happening in Wisconsin and the fight over public employee unions and what Scott Walker was doing that was, in effect, dividing the state. And I guess we connected both of those things to the aftermath of Citizens United when, you know, limits were taken off of spending by billionaires and corporate interests. And there just was a free-for-all in the elections. And we understood that there was a connection, and the film is sort of a look at what that connection is.
Every so often we hear a pronouncement that the Tea Party is done, that the influence is gone, and yet we wake up and see that Eric Cantor is out and that the Tea Party has had a shocking victory. I wonder if you follow those kind of races and that makes your film even more relevant now.
Well, absolutely. I mean, what we do in Citizen Coke is tell the story of the divided Republican Party and the people within the party that are fighting for their long-held beliefs and traditions and their fight against the Tea Party, which they feel has been hijacking their interests. We now know that the Tea Party was lavishly funded by billionaire Charles and David Koch through their various front groups and also directly. And we know that while there has been a populist uprising around the country, we believe that that has been hijacked by these moneyed interests. So we really were interested when we were on the ground in Wisconsin to talk to a lot of these Republicans, particularly Republicans who were yearning, you know, for the old days in their own party and having deep conflicts about where their party was headed. I think that the Tea Party isn't dead. Look, whether or not their candidates win, and in this case they did, but their beliefs are front and center, and so much of those extreme beliefs have been mainstream within the Republican Party, that whether or not their candidates win, those billionaires, those corporate interests are winning.
What motivates the Koch brothers? You know, especially, I think that question is especially important because there are certain super wealthy Americans who the American public is very familiar with, and there are some that the Kochs, I think most people are not familiar with. What motivates them?
Well, gosh, I can't say that I know, but I can tell you that when we started making our film in January 2011, Charles and David Koch had a combined net worth of $50 billion. And 3 years later, right now, today, their net worth has doubled. Their fortune is $100 billion. That's, you know, unbelievable, frankly, at a time in the past 3 years when average working people, middle-class Americans, you know, if they're lucky enough to see more money in their paycheck, it's, you know, in the four figures. So I think, I don't know what motivates them, but they've certainly done a good job of making themselves, enriching themselves, I think at our expense.
But a lot of defenders of capitalism would say that isn't it a sign of the health of the country that even when people are hurting, the smartest or the savviest among us can still thrive in really remarkable ways?
Well, look, I think you have to look at what their front groups and what they themselves have advocated against. I mean, these are the guys who have been railing against the minimum wage legislation, raising the minimum wage in states and communities around the country. So they have $100 billion, but they won't, they don't want people to earn a living wage. I think that that's really wrong. David Koch, when he ran for Libertarian vice presidency in 1980 and received a fringe 1% of the vote, was advocating to abolish Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare. He wanted to do away with the EPA and any kind of government oversight that would hem in his operations as a petrochemical giant. So, look, I think that all the work that they've done organizing politically happens to really benefit their bottom line. And I don't think that, it's about, the success of capitalism. I think actually it's survival of the fittest.
We're talking to
Survival of the greediest.
Talking to Tia Lesson, one of the filmmakers behind Citizen Coke, showing at the Little Theater, talking about a film that seeks to, I think, educate people about a process. And some of the reviews have focused on that process. And one of the reviews from IndieWire was asking the question of, wanted to know if the filmmakers, if the question is about showing us how flawed and manipulated the voting system and in their words, the act of casting a ballot has become. They say that Citizen Coke does a very good job of that. Then they ask the question of how did we get here? Why do we allow this to continue to happen? And so how did you address those kind of questions? But what kind of questions are you trying to answer for the moviegoers in this case, Tia?
Well, I guess we were trying to make sense of the rise of the Tea Party amidst in the aftermath of the what Wall Street had done to all of us around the country, and why it was that folks in the Tea Party were doing, I guess, the organizing work for billionaires and corporate interests that didn't seem to be aligned with their own interests. As individuals and middle-class and working-class Americans. We were also trying to understand at the core of it what it was happening on the state level, why Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, would expend all of his political capital to really take down the public employee unions in his state. And, because we knew it really wasn't about wages or pensions. I mean, there was no real fiscal crisis in Wisconsin. He was giving, huge tax breaks to corporations and billionaires. So what we discovered, I think, so that was our main question, is what is going on here? What does labor have to do with all this? And I think what we say in the film, what we found on the ground in Wisconsin and elsewhere is that the extreme right wing are trying to take out organized labor because organized labor donates by and large to Democrats in big sums, not sums that actually are equal to the Koch brother donations or donations of their friend groups to Republicans, but in sums, big enough to pose a threat to their agenda. And so their attempt to just kneecap the unions was, I think, a cynical political maneuver, and it hasn't just happened in Wisconsin. It's starting in Wisconsin. It's happened all over the country, and we're all experiencing the fallout from that.
Investigative journalist David K. Johnston is going to join our discussion Thursday night, and he has said many times on this program and elsewhere that the folks in the Tea Party seem to recoil, and actually, let me back up and say, he would probably point out that the average American modern conservative recoils at the word welfare or has a pejorative view of the word welfare. But when we talk about corporate welfare, it gets very defensive. Do you find that dichotomy strange to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I think when people understand what corporate welfare is, they recoil also. I mean, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. I do believe average people, you know, when they understand the kinds of tax breaks and subsidies that corporate America gets, you know, they get very angry. I mean, there are a lot of huge corporations that don't pay a penny in taxes. And, you know, people who buy groceries at the grocery store pay more than, you know, some of these, you know, major corporations. We don't know how much taxes Charles David Koch pay or Koch Industries because they're a privately held company. And so we can only guess. But we do know that they've worked hard to eliminate corporate taxes and taxes for the wealthiest in places like Kansas. And across the country, and they're trying to do that on the federal level, and that just seems, you know, unfair.
We've heard Democratic commentators or progressive commentators argue that in many ways Republican voters are voting against their own best interests, and when it comes to the Tea Party, I'm reading a summation of Eric Cantor's defeat to a Tea Party-backed candidate. And much of the description of the Tea Party is that the Tea Party is anti-big business, that they are sort of this populist splinter of the Republican Party. But if that's true, if they are anti-big business, what's the relationship with the Koch brothers, who are the very epitome of big business?
Well, the rhetoric might be anti-big business, but that's not what the Tea Party politicians on Capitol Hill are. Those are not the changes that they're enacting. They're doing the bidding of corporate interests. So I don't know where he gets that analysis. If you listen to things people say, that's one thing. But if you look at what their elected politicians actually do, you know, that's altogether different.
I think maybe to some
degree. And that's the problem. That's the problem with all this corporate money elections. Ultimately, no matter who votes these politicians in, and no matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans, ultimately, who's ever funding their campaigns are going to have their ear. And these politicians want to be reelected, and they're going to do the bidding of the folks that are footing the bill. We follow Buddy Romer around. He was a presidential candidate in the Republican Party in 2012, and he was a big advocate for public financing of elections. I mean, for the same reason that for the same reason that we need to publicly fund our public media and public television, public radio, and we need to fund our candidates in our elections, so that they do not, so that high dollar donors and corporate interests don't hold sway.
I think the notion of the Tea Party is, at least the rank and file, as being anti-big business may actually be more of an outgrowth of their admiration for some of the writings of the founders and Thomas Jefferson, among others, warning about banks. And I think that there is at least some opprobrium to banks in the Tea Party. But you know, you mentioned Buddy Romer. Most Americans, I still think most Americans have never even heard of Buddy Romer, and he is a very interesting character in politics. I thought the fact that the film brought him into it, I think, was a good lesson. Why did you decide to bring Buddy Romer into it?
Well, Buddy Romer was a congressman from the state of Louisiana and a Louisiana governor, and actually one of the most qualified and experienced politicians on the ballot in the Republican primaries in 2012, and he couldn't even get a place at the debates. I mean, the guy he decided to cap any donations at $100 or less. He was not taking super PAC money. He was not taking PAC money. He was sort of a citizen, homegrown campaign, and the Republican Party dismissed him. They wouldn't put him, I think there were 21, 22 debates. He couldn't get in a single one of them. And his major platform was, you know, getting rid of money in politics.
Would his opponents have said that Buddy Romer was not accepting those big donations because no one was offering those to him?
Well, I don't know that they weren't or weren't, but he was, you know, that was part of his platform, was getting rid of, you know, big money in politics.
Yeah.
So the guy actually, he's a small town banker. He has some personal wealth, but he wasn't relying on any of that. He was relying on small dollar donors to propel him forward.
It is always interesting to see how they decide who they want to allow into for televised debates, for example, or those kinds of things. And the Buddy Romers of the world always seem to be shut out, don't they?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think that it is striking. You know, he made a lot of sense, and he had a whole lot to say and a whole lot of passion, and his voice was stifled. All this money, this is what happens, all this money in the election spending, they say it's about free speech, but the effect of this money, I mean, the Citizens United decision, which the Supreme Court used the First Amendment to justify all this money in campaigns, but we see the impact of all this money is that it drowns out certain voices, and it amplifies the voices of the wealthiest and of corporate interests. So we think, you know, there ought to be a movement to strengthen the First Amendment and let all of us speak and let all of us be heard.
Talking to Tia Lesson, one of the filmmakers behind Citizen Coke, a documentary airing, and we're hoping to see you tonight at the Little Theater, it will continue to show at the Little Theater. We're curious to know if there was a reaction from the Cokes themselves, Tia.
Well, look, I think the biggest reaction came through public television, and David Koch's money and power was so great over there that it corrupted, I think, one of America's most trusted institutions. So we asked ourselves the question, you know, if David Koch's money can corrupt the good people over at public television, you know, who can't it corrupt? We haven't heard directly from David Koch or Charles Koch about the film, or frankly from Scott Walker, but we invite a conversation, and we hope they'll join us at one of our screenings. We're all over the country. We're in fact going to be screening in Wichita, where Koch Industries is headquartered. We're screening in New York and Palm Springs and the Hamptons and every other place where the Kochs have their mansion. So we're happy to even comp a ticket for them if they can't afford it. But we invite them to come and see it.
I somehow think that that's a generous offer that they probably don't need. Let me wrap up with this. You know, when documentary filmmakers finally get their work out to the public, there are some films that are designed to try to reach an audience that might be averse to the message, or at least think it's averse to the message. And certainly I would think that you would welcome anyone from the Tea Party to come in and at least watch this film. So maybe I'll start there. What would a Tea Party voter think if they sit and watch the entire film?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think I'd love to hear them listen to the voices of the other Republicans that we feature in the film, of Brian Cunningham and Mario Jo Cavett and Dee Ives, who are struggling as Republicans, you know, with their party's identity, because they feel that the Tea Party agenda is not really about the redistribution of wealth from the poorest to the richest, but in fact that's what those who've hijacked the Tea Party are advocating and implementing in public policy. So, gosh, I mean, I think that we really want this film to generate discussion and dialogue, and we invite everybody from all political stripes to come in and see the film, and also independents, you know, people who feel shut out of both parties, and folks who actually have stopped voting because they're so sick and tired of all this money and all this, you know, garbage and all these ads that come their way. you know, because I think the only answer to all of this is voter engagement, is you know, people showing at the polls and telling our politicians through the power of their vote what it is that they want and what it is they value.
Yeah, I think that was the broader question then that I was leaning toward, which was, it would be very interesting to see what Tea Party voters would say if they watched this film. But is this film more designed to galvanize the left to say, you knew this was going on, or you heard bits and pieces, but sit down, look at it in one sitting, and then get up and do something?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're not advocacy, you know, filmmakers. We're trying to tell a story and get you, you know, involved in this moment, in this political moment in 2012 that has engulfed, you know, all of us. And look, it's not so much a takedown of the Koch brothers as it is an exploration of the fracturing of the Republican Party and what all that money, you know, is doing, you know, on the ground, and why middle class Americans and working people through their labor unions are under attack. So we really want to open the door, and we invite folks to do any number of things. Some groups are using these films these film screenings to create more public support for public media. Some folks are using these film screenings to get folks to register to vote. Others are you know, doing more direct campaign finance reform work and encouraging people to channel their energy and anger at their elected officials and force some accountability around money in politics. So whatever it is, whatever the outcome, we just invite folks to show up and see what they want to do with the film and how they respond.
Well, I'll say it again, as disappointed as you must have been with PBS, you are generous in your analysis of the situation, and I like to think that you're accurate, that this was perhaps a mistake, but an indication that individual members, small donors, are more important than ever. Have you gotten any sense that PBS is going to move to... have you sensed that things are improving with PBS at all? Have you heard from them recently?
No, they haven't reached out to us in the aftermath of all this. But look, as long as people like the Koch brothers and their organizations like Americans for Prosperity are railing against public funding of our public institutions, and that's not just public television and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which also funds NPR, you know, they don't want the EPA out there. They don't want the Food and Drug Administration. They want to abolish the post office and our public libraries and public schools. So as long as these, you know, fat cats are trying to take away our public services, I think we need, as members of the public, to rally behind our public services and our public servants who are doing, you know, such important work in our communities and our schools to keep our kids safe, to keep our air and water clean. I mean, I just think that now's the time. This is not the time to cut our social safety net. You know, it's the time to mend it and to strengthen it. And that's what government does.
Tia, thanks for taking the time. We look forward to the discussion at the Little Theater tonight, and be very interesting to see, because we certainly hope people from all political stripes and backgrounds come and have a discussion, and thanks for sparking that discussion for us.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to hearing feedback from the screening.
That's filmmaker Tia Lesson of Citizen Koch. And once again, we do hope to see you tonight at 6:30 at the Little Theater. We're going to take the shortest break in radio, and then we're going to come back and going to do a couple of things. We're going to hear what some of the reviews of the film has said, and we're going to look at events in the news this week, the defeat of Eric Cantor, essentially at the hands of the Tea Party, showing that this film is more relevant than ever tonight. So we're looking at the Tea Party, the modern American political movement, money in politics. And if you want to weigh in, you can join the discussion as well. 263-WXXI, 263-9994, or toll-free 844-295-TALK. It's all coming up next on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, how state lawmakers are trying to make sure Medley Center doesn't get any more of your tax dollars. We'll look at why medical marijuana has stalled, with just 6 days left before the end of the legislative session. And we'll talk about the global economy, with a look at why big companies have been so slow to hire, even though they're making a lot of money. That's all coming up next hour on Connections.
Have you been exploring Grandma's attic lately? Is that garage sale find worth its weight in gold? Join us for WXXI's second annual appraisal fair, Saturday, June 14th. Bring in your favorite treasure and have it appraised by one of our certified antique experts. For tickets and information, go public at wxxi.org/events or call 258-0200. Supported in part by ESL Federal Credit Union.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, joined now by Peter Wehner, the marketing coordinator for the Little Theater, and little event coming up tonight, as we've been talking about, Peter. This is, I think, what the Little does so well, is it not only brings interesting documentary films, but it brings discussion-worthy films, and that allows the community to get involved.
Yeah, that's right, Evan. We try our best with that. We bring in, on average, probably a discussion, a panel discussion, or an expert Q&A once a week or so, and it's a big part of what we do.
I mentioned before the interview with filmmaker Tia Lesson of Citizen Coke, but the issue of endorsement, because there are questions listeners may say, well, you're showing this film, does that mean you endorse the message of this film?
No, we don't necessarily endorse the message of the film. Really what we endorse is discussion about any topics that people feel are relevant to art or, you know, film. We see as an arts organization that our role is really to take ideas that people are concerned about, and this is certainly one of them, very relevant. And for people who have given a voice to that issue, we try to give them an audience for that voice. And so if a different point of view on the same topic come up, we would do the same thing.
I was going to say, you know, political films and documentary films have got to be... your job is already difficult enough in choosing documentaries, but this is tough because anytime you choose a film, no matter what the political stripe is, someone will probably complain a little.
That's true. Any film that takes, you know, a definite point of view on any topic worth discussing, there's going to be people that have a different view. And so it is difficult to choose those films. We have, you know, a series called One Take Stories Through the Lens, which the programmer is Linda Maroney. I'll give her a shout out because she's fantastic. And she and our general manager, Derek, do a great job in sort of coordinating on what films we're showing. And we do try to cover a wide range of topics and wide range of viewpoints. But yeah, there's always people that disagree, and we hope that they come and that during that discussion, when they have a chance to sort of voice their opinion, that they do, because that really is what makes it interesting.
I want to read a little bit of some of the reaction, some to the film, some to the events in the news this week regarding the Tea Party. We'll get you caught up to speed there. First of all, on the film, again, the film is Citizen Coke, national release today, and it's going to show tonight at the Little at 6:30. By the way, if they can't get there tonight, Pete, to the Little Theater, can they still see it at the Little Theater?
Definitely. It is showing, I believe, through the weekend, and then again on the 19th next Thursday.
All right, through the weekend and on the 19th next Thursday. If you want to check out the schedule, it's at thelittle.org. Here's the Hollywood Reporter writing about this film, and I actually, what I appreciate about this review is it doesn't come in with an ideological bent. It comes in with sort of a curiosity for good filmmaking, and so here's what the Hollywood Reporter writes about Citizen Coke. Quote, "You don't have to get to the end credits crawl to discern the political sentiments of the filmmakers. At the ending of this filmic opinion piece, it's not surprising to see that Michael Moore and Sundance gave their approval to their left-of-center views. Basically, filmmakers Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson create a central narrative that because Walker won," they're talking about Scott Walker of Wisconsin, "he won because he had the most money. Admittedly, a documentary can also be propaganda for a cause, or to put it more kindly, advocacy. Credit to the filmmakers for positing their point of view. While one might agree or disagree with their theme, aesthetically, Citizen Coke is feisty. From the salty music to the varied opinions of off-road coots who express their displeasure with the electoral process, it percolates with the odd energy and pulse of the voters. The filmmakers have an eye for characters, and their down-home philosophizing is perhaps the most refreshing part of the film. Politically, the star is conservative Ed Romer, or Buddy Romer, who can't even get into the Republican debates, but whose Louisiana charm cuts through the muck of electoral official speak." So there's a review from the Hollywood Reporter, and you know they're keying in on the way the film's put together. Pete, I always marvel at documentary filmmakers because they have enormous power.
Yeah,
don't they?
They definitely, definitely do. I mean, whatever is left on the cutting room floor is left there for a reason, and you know, you could film the same topic infinite different ways.
I have chosen to not see the entire film until tonight. So we have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to wait and be in the audience tonight at 6:30 at the Little, seeing it in the whole for the first time, mm-hmm. because I want to have sort of a fresh, raw reaction. Now, my job tonight is to moderate the discussion. And again, Linda Powell and David K. Johnston will be there helping lead the discussion. But if you haven't been out to one of these discussions before, it's not just the panelists on the stage, right, Pete?
No, that's absolutely correct. The panelists on the stage definitely know what they're talking about. Obviously, you definitely know what you're talking about. But also, it gives the audience a chance to get up and sort of voice their opinion. And sometimes that's about the topic being discussed. Sometimes that's about the form of the film. I've seen a lot of these discussions, and they're always interesting. People, you know, have different backgrounds, and they have different things that they're bringing to the table, so it's always new, and it's always exciting.
It's not always, though, people who agree with everything they see on the screen, right, Pete?
No, not at all. We've had quite a few where there's, you know, different viewpoints suggested, and, you know, it's always done in a tactful way, and, you know, for the most part, at least. And
that'll be my job.
Yeah,
sure.
that's your job
right,
tonight.
That's right.
So keep everybody, you know, nice, if a little bit feisty, I hope. But yeah, I mean, it's actually a lot more interesting when everybody doesn't have the same opinion. So if there's listeners out there who don't necessarily agree with what they've seen in trailers and stuff for the Citizen Coke, I hope that they especially come out.
If there are Tea Party listeners.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and that's why I wanted to raise the question with Tia Lesson in the interview. What do you think somebody from the Tea Party would say? I think you risk losing people if you sort of make a mockery of someone. And I don't think that's the intention, but I want to go and check it out tonight.
Absolutely, yeah. I agree with you. I don't think it's a mockery at all. I think that, you know, there's a definite viewpoint being stated. It's not, you know, a sort of a milquetoast documentary whatsoever. But I also think that, you know, there's definitely another side of the story that needs to be represented tonight.
Well, and speaking of that side of the story, and stay here, Pete, because we're going to make sure that all of our listeners get all the details before we let you go. But
okay.
Earlier this week, before this interview, after WXXI and The Little had announced that we were having not only the screening of Citizen Coke tonight, but I was going to moderate and we were going to have a panel discussion, I had a friend say, is the Tea Party really all that relevant anymore? Is it even still a story worth getting fired up about? And lo and behold, this week, just 2 days later after I had that conversation, a political shock, the likes of which we haven't seen in a long time, Eric Cantor, a House Majority Leader in line to become Speaker, Congressman from Virginia, one of the most powerful people in the country, a Republican, Eric Cantor, loses to Dave Brat, a Tea Party candidate. And Eric Cantor will be out. All of a sudden, the Republican Party shakeup is the big, big story of the week. And now the question going forward is this an outlier, or is this a sign of cascading Tea Party influence to come in the coming election season? So what I wanted to do now is I want to read a couple of reactions from people who cover politics just to give you a sense of how impactful the Tea Party is right now. And again, we're not saying good or bad. We're saying this is just a fact. This is Michael Tomasky writing in the Daily Beast, quote, Eric Cantor was not even an enemy of the Tea Party. He was, in fact, the Tea Party's guy in the leadership for much of the President Barack Obama era. He carried the tea into the Speaker's office, and still he got creamed by the Tea Party in this election. Has a party leader ever lost a primary like this? Stop and take this in. Like any political journalist, I'm a little bit of a historian of this sort of thing, although I readily admit my knowledge isn't encyclopedic, but I sure can't think of anything Tom Foley, the Democratic House Speaker in the early 90s, lost re-election while he was Speaker, but that was in the general to a Republican, which is a whole different ballgame. And he was the first sitting Speaker to lose an election since, get this, 1862. But how about in a primary, the number two man in all of the House losing a primary in his own party? There is no chance the House will touch it. That means immigration reform is dead in this Congress, which means that the next Congress, the Senate would have to take the lead in passing anything of substance, including immigration reform. That's how big this primary election is. That's Michael Tomasky writing in the Daily Beast about the Tea Party and Eric Cantor's defeat this week, which has really shook things up. So, Pete, your job is not to follow the elections, but to have the film. But doesn't that just tell you that the relevance of this film is right at the surface right now?
It definitely does. I mean, there's really no better time for this film to be coming to the Little. There's no better time for folks to be coming to the Little to see it. And tonight really is the best opportunity because it's the only screening that we're having that is going to be free. It's the only screening that we're having that is going to have a discussion following. And we have amazing, you know, people lined up tonight for the discussion, to say nothing of the audience that will be there tonight. So there's other opportunities to see it after this, but this is the best time to come.
Let's grab a phone call. Molly in Brighton. Thanks for calling, Molly.
Hi. I really enjoyed it. I wish I had called earlier. It's very simple. The Tea Party is taxed enough already. These are the same people who believe that government has no right to tax people. They're representatives, the rich people, because they don't like New Deal, they don't like safety nets, they don't like that. It's very simple. They are anti-government people. And there's nothing but to be proud of into being a Tea Party. It's extreme conservatism. They don't understand the modern world at all. In finances, at least, and how governments have been running for many years since the New Deal.
But Molly, let me also look. I think some people will vehemently disagree with that. Some people will say you're right on. Let me also read something to you, though, that Andrew Sullivan wrote. Now, Andrew Sullivan was a longtime conservative who has become a very interesting political commentator. He is a conservative who's become one of Barack Obama's biggest supporters, and he's not a fan of the Tea Party. And here's what he writes, though. He says, "Don't underestimate the power of right-wing populism." Here's his. I want to get your take on this, Molly.
I am absolutely agreeing with him.
Okay.
Of course, that's why they're dangerous. Because when bad people have power, that's terrible.
Okay. Well.
That's it.
All right. Well, Molly, look. Thank you for the call and the sentiment.
And I hope I can come tonight.
Well, we hope to see you tonight.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Molly says, "When bad people have power." I don't want to say that we're endorsing the concept that Tea Party is bad people, but maybe you disagree with their politics. Andrew Sullivan writes about the notion, though, that people on the left underestimate right-wing populism at their own peril. Here's what Sullivan writes this morning. Quote, "My underlying take on what just happened with Eric Cantor is this. We live in a potentially powerful populist moment. The economy is failing to help middle and working class people make headway, while the wealthiest are living higher on the hog than since the days of the robber barons. Wall Street's masters of the universe nearly wiped out the U.S. and global economy, and there has been scarcely any accountability for their recklessness and greed and hubris. Big business favors mass, cheap immigration, which adds marginally to the woes of the working poor. All of this is grist to someone like Elizabeth Warren on the left, yes, but also to someone like Dave Brat or Ted Cruz. The Democrats better not underestimate this." That's Andrew Sullivan writing about the Tea Party's power in the populist movement, and maybe this becomes a populist election year. So we'll begin to wrap our discussion on that note and say we hope that that's just the seed of much more to come tonight. Pete Wehner, let's go down the details one more time for what's happening tonight at the Little Theater.
Okay, so tonight is at 6:30 in Theater 1 off of East Avenue there is Citizen Coke with a discussion to follow, and you should definitely stay for that discussion. And then on Saturday and Sunday and Monday, that's June 14th to 16th, there's also going to be Citizen Coke screened again, but those will be general admission prices as normal. And then again on Thursday, June 19th, a week from today.
And I will be moderating tonight's discussion. We have a couple of panelists who are going to help us. One has been on this program. I've not met Linda Powell before. She is a University of Rochester political science professor and an author and someone who has understood campaign finance for many years. And then the other panelist is David K. Johnston. He's been on this program. You've certainly heard him before, investigative journalist from Brighton, but his trilogy of books about the way money works in American politics and policy is a lot of people consider must reading for understanding the way our government operates. So David will be there tonight. Lind will be there tonight. We hope you will be there tonight, 6:30. I expect Pete Wehner will be there tonight.
I will be there tonight as well.
If you can find Pete, you usually are at the Little Theater, aren't you?
That's true.
I got a minute left, Pete. Beyond Citizen Coke, what's going on at the Little Theater lately?
Oh, so much. If you want something a little bit lighter, my favorite right now in the theater is Chef. It's about food trucks. They're don't come hungry because you'll leave a lot worse than you came
it's
in.
It's Jon Favreau, and... I've been told by people who are true foodies that he pulls off being a real culinary master very, very well.
He does. It's really amazing. Some of the shots of, you know, just him cutting up vegetables is something really to see.
Thank you for your time tonight.
Well, thank you.
And we'll see you tonight. We'll see you tonight at the Little Theater at 6:30 for Citizen Coke. My thanks to Tia Lesson, one of the filmmakers who was able to join us earlier this hour talking about the way they put that film together and why. And again, don't feel like if you disagree with the message, you can't come. As Pete's been telling you, the best discussions come when we've got a big mix, a tapestry of political viewpoints and backgrounds, and they do a great job at the Little Theater of facilitating discussion that can be strong but also civil. That's the hallmark. Short break, and breaking news on a number of fronts from Albany. Medical marijuana, just got some news on what's going on there. Also hearing about Medley Center, and we're going to take a look at the global economy as well next hour. Much more to come on this Thursday on Connections on member-supported public radio.